Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to what is being paid attention to, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Friday, September the 10th, at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the year 2010. Very excited about today's show and actually the next couple weeks. And let me explain to you why. This Monday marks the beginning of the National ADHD Awareness Week. As a result, the ADHD Coaches Organization, with the support of CHAD, ADDA, Totally ADD, and Attitude Magazine, approached me to do a three-part series on ADHD awareness. Today we're going to cover part one, next one is part two, and next the following week is part three. And the topics for those three episodes today is ADD real? Next week we'll talk about where's the hope, and the final week we'll talk about where's the help. With us today in our virtual studios are Dr. Christopher Montgomery and ADD coach Candace Taylor. Dr. Montgomery has received his training at McGill University in Montreal and McMaster University in Hamilton. He's a fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons of Canada and of the American Academy of Pediatrics. He has a consulting pediatrics practice in Oshawa, Canada. Candace specializes in working with busy ADD women, many of whom did not receive their diagnosis until their adulthood. With her wit, warmth, and legendary humor, she makes her a formidable ally with many women looking for strategies to manage how ADD is turning up in their life. Candace has high praise for ADD women, calling herself a marvelous, adaptable, sometimes quirky, but always persevering, one-of-a-kind woman. So with that, I'd like to welcome both Candace and Dr. Montgomery to the show. Welcome, guys.
Hello, Jeff. Hello.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having us.
How are you guys doing? You guys are you're coming to us from Canada today, right?
Yes, we are.
Right, close to Toronto.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we're based down here in Tampa, Florida. Nice sunny Tampa, so it's nice and hot. I kind of wish I was up in some of that Toronto weather right now. Let's kick things off, and let's begin with some of the basics. Dr. Montgomery, can you begin to articulate what the medically recognized definition of ADHD is, so we're all kind of starting on the same page?
Sure, Jeff. There's two main core sets of symptoms that people with ADHD demonstrate. Typically, there's a level of inattentiveness, and that can come across as being disorganized or absent-minded. The other set of group of symptoms are hyperactivity and impulsivity. Most people that have ADHD will either have a combination of those or one or the other. And they have those symptoms to a point that it's impairing. Most people experience inattentiveness or hyperactivity or impulsive behavior to some extent. But it's within normal limits to have it occasionally, but if it's something that's impairing your day-to-day function, then it's a problem. People with ADHD also... Sorry?
So we all kind of exhibit some of the symptoms of this, but the question is it's kind of like a continuum. How far, where does it lie
right
on that continuum?
Exactly, yeah. So is it extreme? Well, I deal mostly with children, so is it extreme compared to their peers, compared to their classmates? But also the symptoms need to be pervasive, meaning they have to be present in all environments. So a kid who's a little rambunctious at home but is able to put forth his best effort at school and pay attention there would be less likely to have ADHD. The symptoms also have to have been present from a very early age, before the age of 7. That can be a little tricky when it comes to diagnosing adults, but it's usually fairly easy to recognize in kids. Also the symptoms have to have been present for at least 6 months, but again, most people by the time they are seeking any kind of medical attention, they've had symptoms much longer than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's let's talk about some of the evidence of ADD. There's I think it's relatively common. I mean, I've worked with some people before that, you know, families where a parent will say, you know, ADHD is not real, the kid's just lazy or something like that. Can you talk about some of the evidence that ADD is real?
Sure. That's actually still a relatively commonly held belief that ADHD is really a result of poor parenting or, you know, the kid is just lazy. But there's actually quite a bit of evidence to prove that this is actually a neurobiological disorder. There's been a lot of quality work in brain imaging studies that show very clearly that different areas of the brain are different. They're different size. They function differently in people with ADHD. There's certain pathways that have been shown consistently to be more sluggish in people with ADHD. There's also a lot of genetic evidence. Even when controlling for environmental factors, we see that ADHD tends to happen more frequently in families. The one thing that I do see a lot in the office is people saying, well, you know, I really, you know, really just think my kid's a little bit lazy and he just needs a bit of a firm hand and everything would be settled. The strongest argument I have against that is just when you see these kids and you see how much they're struggling and how hard they're trying and how upset they are about how things are going and often how upset the people around them are, I just would assume that if the person was lazy, they would just take the path of least resistance and just do the work and avoid all that hardship. The problem is these kids really aren't capable. Even when they put forth their best effort, they can't stay on task, or you know, they're easily distracted, or they behave impulsively. So there's actually quite a bit of evidence available today to prove that this is actually a neurobiological disorder.
You said something that was interesting to me. You know, the path of least resistance for them is really just to kind of comply many times, as opposed to the parent or society, the teachers, the world kind of coming down on them. And that really makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, you know, if they were lazy, they would take the path of least resistance, and some of those times it was just simply do the work and not have to deal with it. Yet,
exactly.
Yet they don't. Hence, you know, if they're not, what's the issue? I mean, do they like living life the hard way, or is there something really at issue here?
Right. And we'll hear it all the time. The parent will say, you know, we were just at it. It was hours trying to get this kid to do the work. And when they finally sat down and did it, we did it in, you know, 15 minutes. Well, if the child had really been capable of doing it, I'm sure they would have liked to avoid all the hardship, too. But there's real underlying biochemical factors there that prevent them from tuning in when they need to at times.
Absolutely. How prevalent is ADHD?
Well, it's actually quite common. There's different statistics, but most people would quote a number of somewhere around 6% in children. Another way to look at that would be to say probably at least one kid in each classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a prevalent disorder. Probably the only thing that I see that is as prevalent as that would be asthma, and it's certainly in that ballpark. So I'm certainly seeing it every day.
Am I correct that ADHD is the number one diagnosed neurological disorder, or is that, am I
you're correct with that, yeah.
So it's not only prevalent, but it's actually very prevalent in the mental health community in terms of diagnoses.
Absolutely, yeah.
And is that 6% in general for children, does that run through for adults too, or is it, or do you have any feel for what the percentage of adults have?
Yeah, I do. The frequency or the prevalence in adults is probably a little bit lower, but there's a few reasons for that. First of all, ADHD does definitely exist throughout the life cycle. So it wasn't that long ago that really people believed that ADHD was a pediatric disorder, and clearly that's not the case. Clearly there's plenty of evidence for adult ADHD, but the picture does change a little bit over time. And we know that over time, a lot of the hyperactive and impulsive symptoms tend to improve. that occurs even without medication.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that probably just has to do with maturation of the brain, but also people get, you know, they get the message. They get fed up when you're a little kid and, you know, nobody wants you to come to their birthday party or play in their games. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you learn to modify your behavior. So that explains why some of those symptoms are perhaps less prevalent. Estimates say that 60 to 90% of people that are diagnosed with ADHD are going to have ADHD as an adult. And sometimes I wonder if those numbers might even be a little bit low, because as adults we get a little bit better at kind of hiding our deficiencies, and
mm-hmm.
we develop different strategies to deal with some of our difficulties. But the internal sort of mental chaos is still there for that person.
Well, certainly, remember, I want to talk to Candace in a couple of seconds, and she, you know, she works a lot with women that are diagnosed later in life, but I too work a lot with adults that are diagnosed later in life, and I would just, I'm kind of curious to catch your comments on my perception. To me, it seems like more and more adults are being diagnosed with ADD later in life, and it seems to me, I mean, I have no evidence to this, but as our world becomes more technologically proficient, more and more we're having to, it's become a very much a self-service society. And like I remember years ago, I used to be in insurance sales business, and you know, I had secretaries and stuff to do a whole bunch of stuff, and later I was in the same business, and I was having to change, you know, toner and copiers, which I might not do very often, because it is a challenge. And the self-service nature of that stuff, it's almost like that is that's prompting a lot of people, as it becomes more self-service, to have to do more, which is exacerbating the systems, and people are going out and getting that diagnosis. Is there any, from your perspective, could you comment on that? Is that perception of mine ill-founded, or is it? Do you see any of that?
Well, I think more and more adults are being diagnosed with ADHD. I think there probably are some environmental factors that have to do with that. I think part of it, though, is that there really is, and I sort of alluded to this earlier, there is very strong evidence to show that there is a genetic component to ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all these kids running around that have been diagnosed, and as part of the process, they have to go and meet with a doctor and talk about their own history. And I think for a lot of parents, they, going through that process, they kind of think, you know, geez, I'm, you know, my son's a lot like me. And they start to question the whole diagnosis themselves. And in all honesty, I've had a lot of parents come back to me and say, you know, Doc, I'm not sure I'm supposed to tell you this, but I tried my kid's Ritalin the other day, and it was the best day I've had in years. And so I think part of it is just awareness. But I do think that I think our multitasking society and our plugged-in society does, this is a personal bias perhaps, a personal opinion, but I do think it is a little bit ADHD-agenic. I think it almost mm-hmm. brings out ADHD a little bit in people, because, you know, we are kind of asked to manage a lot of tasks all at once, and that can be pretty tricky. Some people with ADHD thrive on that, and some people with ADHD are overwhelmed by it. So
absolutely, absolutely. Well, to shift off in a little bit different direction, can you tell us from your perspective, what does ADHD look like? Like when you're working with children or adults and they come into your office, describe
right.
what it actually looks like, how it manifests.
Well, typically, again, as a pediatrician, I'm seeing kids. I see kids of all ages, but what typically brings them to my office is difficulties at school. And the difficulties at school can be academic, but often, just as often it's social. So, you know, this is the kid who cannot complete a task. The teacher redirects them and redirects them and redirects them, and the kid produces no work at the end of the day. Or it's the kid who's out in the playground and is getting up in people's face, isn't following the rules of the game, and the friends really just want to have less and less to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, a lot of times in pediatrics, it's academic failure, and other times it's really social failure. You know, these are the kids that aren't getting invited to birthday parties or sleepovers, and So it's, you know, it's certainly difficult for everybody, the kid and the parents.
Certainly, and coming and getting the proper diagnosis and treatment can be very helpful. On the other side of that, what's the worst that can happen if somebody's not diagnosed and treated?
Well, immediately, in the age groups that I'm seeing, the younger children, there'll be school failures, certainly one of the big ones. But then also, a lot of these kids end up, you know, they're on their own on the playground at recess. And, you know, as a parent, that's a pretty hard thing to watch. But as kids get older and move into adulthood, there's some really scary, very real consequences of undiagnosed and untreated ADHD. And in fact, it was a gentleman from, I forget where in the States now, but he did some excellent work looking at driving and ADHD. And there's actually a lot of data now to show that people with ADHD are somewhere on the order of 6 times more likely to have car accidents or impaired driving charges. I mentioned early on that one of the groups of symptoms of ADHD is impulsivity. And not surprisingly, if somebody's particularly impulsive, you would think that they might be more prone to some high-risk behaviors, such as unprotected sexual intercourse, teenage pregnancy, drug and alcohol abuse. These things have all been shown, without a doubt, to be significantly higher in people with untreated ADHD. So there's a lot of high-risk behaviors. And then there's also things like failed marriages. Divorce is higher amongst people with ADHD.
Yeah, I think I saw a statistic one time they're twice as likely to be divorced or something. It's pretty profound.
Yeah, and then difficulties at work as well. You know, everybody has a bad day. Everybody has a boss that rubs them the wrong way. And if you're impulsive and you don't have control of that and you turn around and tell your boss where to go, you're not going to have that job very long. And this is what can happen. So there's huge implications, really, in all spheres of their lives.
Certainly, certainly. I'll tell you what I'd like to do at this point in time is shift gears a little bit. I'd like to go to a break. And when we come back for the break, I'd like to kind of bring Candace in because Dr. Montgomery is very involved in diagnosing and treating adolescents and some adults, but Candace does some work on the coaching side. So once somebody actually has a diagnosis and is going kind of through treatment and needs help with day-to-day type stuff, I'll be interested to ask her some of these questions to get her perspective on it. So before we go to the break, I do want to thank the ADHD Coaches Organization for approaching me to do this series of shows. And I want to recognize them and let you know, if you want more information on the ADHD Coaches Organization, just go to ADHD Coaches. That's ADHDCOACHES.org. And there you can find more information about them. So with that, we'll go to a break. And when we come back, we'll talk to Candace.
This is Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. When you're stuck, what do you pay attention to? If you're paying attention to the same logic or level of thinking that created the problem, maybe you need to pay attention to something else. Dig Coaching excavates outcomes by paying attention to what you pay attention to. After all, if you're paying attention to the wrong thing, you're likely paying attention to the wrong solution. To learn more about finding your obvious solution, go to digcoaching.com and download the free audio file, Finding the Obvious Solutions When They Aren't So Obvious. Don't delay, do it today.
If you have a topic that you want covered or question answered, just email us at info@digcoaching.com.
Be part of the show. Dial 646-652-4409. And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, back to Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and the topic today is ADHD awareness. Is ADHD real? The first part of the show, we were talking to Dr. Christopher Montgomery about ADHD, the definition, evidence, and statistics. Now I'd like to kind of turn things to ADD coach Candace Taylor to talk about, from her perspective, if ADHD is real. So with that, Candace, let's talk about when you're working with somebody with ADHD, how does it present itself to you in coaching them as compared to maybe somebody who doesn't have ADD?
Well, Jeff, everything that Dr. Montgomery said, I would agree with in spades, that it's all there. He's laid it out beautifully. And if one of the people with the characteristics he's talking about comes to see me, one of the things that stands out is not only do they have all of the challenges and consequences that he mentioned, but what I notice mostly is these are people who feel that they live beyond choice. I will have clients say, I know what I have to do, I know when I have to do it, and I know how I have to do it, and I can't do it. That feeling that they can't make themselves, that they're the kid who was labeled as lazy is now the adult whose boss or manager is also wondering if they're pulling their own weight or capable. And as Dr. Montgomery pointed out, you would think with all that duress and stress, and even with the threat of losing your job or your spouse or trashing a degree, you would just get with the program, and you would if you could. So that's what I see are people who want desperately to have what they see laid out in front of them. They know they're capable. They're bright, beyond bright, and they just can't make it happen by themselves.
That's kind of like what we were talking about earlier with Dr. Montgomery, is they want to do it. The easiest way would just be to do it. And if, yeah. Let's say, if it was easy for them to do it, they would have already done it by now.
Exactly.
So clearly there's something here that's challenging.
And what you said earlier, if I may, about becoming a more self-managed society, where before there was a built-in support system for a lot of situations, more and more people are capable with the technology of running their own show. And that is often not a great idea for someone with ADD. We don't necessarily do that well by ourselves. Not that we're not capable, but there's something about having either a real or an invisible support team that seems to help things move forward.
Absolutely. When you're working with someone, what does ADHD coaching look like? Like, when they come to you, how do you work with them?
Wow. Can you narrow that down just a tiny bit? Now, remember who you're talking to. So I've got those 8 televisions going in my mind. So just tell me which channel you want and I'll...
When you have somebody that's been diagnosed, you have somebody later in life that's been diagnosed with ADD, and they kind of come into the office, and, you know, there's that euphoria at first of when they get diagnosed. Most ADDers have, like, wow, you know, there is something. It wasn't just me all this time. There's other like me, or there's a kind of a relief at first, like, okay, wait, I finally defined it. I've got a target. I've got something to work. I can go get some information. And, you know, they kind of go, and that's kind of helpful, and it moves them along. But then at some point in time, they kind of come back, and they still have ADD, and they've got to deal with the world. And when they come to you, how do they come to you? Are they very upset or frustrated? How do you start with them, and how do you break things down and find a path that works for them?
Well, yes, that is the answer. On some level, we break it down. We find out what's already working, and then we try to expand that into a strategy that they can maintain. And you're right, they do come to me because they're at, in their minds, and sometimes really, a point of no return. It is sort of make it or break it. They've had a diagnosis, usually not for very long. I often get clients who've only been diagnosed for a year or so, and that can be anything from a 15-year-old student to a 50-year-old woman, and they want things to start happening. Everything they've done up till now hasn't worked. So we look at specific issues. I'm working with a medical professional at the moment whose paperwork is threatening her career. Getting caught up on it, maintaining it, getting it to the people that need it. So in that, something like that, we would come up with specific strategies, and we set up an accountability system, and we find out what exactly is going to make it relatively easy and enjoyable for them to get where they want to be with their control. If it's not paperwork, it might be, as Dr. Montgomery mentioned, social skills. Sometimes those social skills don't get a lot less awkward even in adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
You get the fellow passed over for promotion over and over because nobody wants to work with him. And in his heart, he's delightful, but that impulsivity, if it's in his mind, it's out his mouth, and he's making enemies faster than friends. So we target the specific thing and try to find a way, based on that person's sort of modus operandi, to make things work more comfortably.
Well, I'll share this with you. When I work with adults that are diagnosed later in life, it is about finding the structure. And what you said was kind of a big deal, at least to me. We try to find out what works for them and their modus operandi.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of taking, looking at them, what does work, and trying to find systems that do. And I'll tell you personally, when people, like I very frequently will, somebody will come and I'll be working with them, and one of the number one things is I need to get organized. And there's a perception they're not very organized, and it's fun because usually I require people to call me, and my first thing is, well, how did you make this call on time?
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because many of them don't know how they did, but they did make the call on time. So something worked. Really the question is what did, and many of them many times are really oblivious to some fundamental structures that actually allow them to get there. Some of them, they might have put it into their phone. They don't put everything in their phone, but they happen to put this on the phone. Or they might have had a conversation. And in trying to start to what does work, and literally it's funny because I love to ask that question to them, how did you make this appointment? Because it catches them.
Mm-hmm.
They're startled by it. Well, you did something right. Let's try to figure out what it is. And as you start to find that, then you one, find out how they do it, what their modus operandi that they might not be conscious of, and then at the same time what you talked about, try to find structures and ways in order to hold them capable, in order for them to kind of move forward. And through that combination of understanding how they are and they're different, and understand other types of structures or programs to kind of, or tools even, to kind of help get them, you kind of marry those two so that they can find something that works for them and that they can rely on.
There's already a lot that works. I know John Rady's fond of saying, if you're breathing, there's more right than wrong with you. And
well,
I think people with ADD often are so well-versed in what isn't working and what's wrong. I've had people come to me only half-joking and say, fix me, Candace, fix me. And I do exactly what you said. We look at what is already working because something is. They are coming to me with a career they might lose, but they have the career. They got the degrees. They're moving forward in their life. It may be, hard labor, but there's lots of goodies in there. And there's some wonderful attributes that go with having ADD that once you figure out what it is, it can give you a remarkable life. And too often people miss that. They're so busy with that negative self-talk about what's wrong and what isn't working. They don't notice what is.
You're exactly right. And I think that kind of goes back. I asked Dr. Montgomery, what's the worst case that can happen if you're not treated? And you know, a life of being told to sit still, shut up, you know, don't do that, mm-hmm. no, you're doing that wrong, you're doing this wrong. After a while, I like to fathom myself as an attention coach because it's really shifting to many times that these individuals have been their whole life, their attention has been directed to what's not working, that they don't really know what does work. And as you just said, you know, many of them have a career. They got there. They were intelligent, smart people, or they wouldn't have been in the position they were.
Sure.
But there's
yeah,
so
what you pay attention to grows. That will eventually fill your horizon. That will eventually fill your self-perception. You throw in a little neurogenesis, and your brain is all about what's wrong with you. And there's very little firing that's saying, over here, look, this is working, this is good stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Candace and Dr. Montgomery, I'd like to thank both of you for coming on the show today, and I'd like to thank the ADHD Coaches Organization for inspiring this three-part series. I'd like to remind you that this is just part one. Next Friday, we're going to have a show on Where's the Hope? And then in 2 weeks from now, we will have another show on Where's the Help? Both shows promise to be very exciting discussions. If you want some more information on the ADHD Coaches Organization, go to adhdcoaches.org. And with that, I'd like to thank Candace, Dr. Montgomery again for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for having us.
Catch everyone next week.
Okay, take care, Jeff. Bye-bye.